if you are listening right now, fall right now and tell me what your natural instinct is to do. Tell me, if matter of fact, go push somebody. Go push somebody and watch them fall. And tell me if they try to catch themselves with their knuckles.
Push a baby down.
Don't push my baby, though.
A baby gonna go like, ha! No one does this but Wolverine, man.
If you're not ready, then go ahead and tell me you're not ready.
I object to you getting records. You've been intrusive into people's personal lives.
In other words, the car didn't hit him, and he wasn't hit by the car.
I'm not a lawyer, but...
Are y'all keeping up?
I'm not a lawyer, but...
The debrief.
Hello, welcome to the I'm not a lawyer, but...
The debrief.
Podcast. I am Melanie, aka I'm not a lawyer, but, and I am joined by my co-host
Gooseberry. How y'all doing?
I hope you're doing well, because today is a doozy, because we are still talking about the Karen Reed trial, and lot has happened in the last week. There's so much that has happened in the last week that we are going to attempt to cover it all.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just so much, so we're gonna hit the things that we can. But we recognize we are missing a lot. So obviously, make sure you're following I'm Not a Lawyer, but on YouTube, mm-hmm. TikTok. Sometimes I post on Instagram. But those places, because that's where I'm posting most of the actual daily recaps.
Yeah.
And then today, on the podcast, we get on here and just talk about it.
Talk it up. Chat it up. I'm so sad about this case, because it's like setting the bar. For excitement.
Yeah. Well, I think I already have the next case that we should follow.
Okay. I hope it's a different one.
No, it's a different tone. It's different tone. But it's interesting. So I have to figure out how we can do it. Anyway, I have plans. We're going to get through Karen Reed first. But before we dive into Karen Reed, the first segment of the podcast, we are calling Mel's Mini Bar. And I have a mini bar today. Somebody in the Patreon was asking about the difference between something being dismissed with prejudice and something being dismissed without prejudice. In my head, I have to think about without prejudice first, mm-hmm. because I think about the root of prejudice, which means like prejudgment, right? Like a determinant, like I have predetermined something about you. So when I think of something being dismissed without prejudice, without a determination, without a judgment, that means it can be brought back.
Okay.
So there's no, in general, there's no judgments or determinations that have been made. So this case can be refiled.
Mm-hmm.
If a case is dismissed with prejudice, with judgment, that means a judge has determined, has made some kind of determination about this case, that is that this cannot be refiled. So without prejudice, it can be refiled. With prejudice, it cannot be refiled.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The other option that can happen is something can end in a mistrial. You have to think about a mistrial as like incomplete. Okay. And so sometimes people are like, mistrial, especially in YSL.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the attorneys have been asking the judge that they want, or saying, requesting, motioning for a mistrial.
Mm-hmm.
A mistrial does not mean anybody goes home. It does not mean that anybody's been found not guilty.
Okay.
A mistrial is simply incomplete. We cannot finish this thing. This thing has not been finished, right? Legally finished, right?
Okay.
And so what that means is you can run it again. And so a good example is the YNW Melly trial, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hung jury, which means it was a mistrial. It was incomplete. The jury could not come to a determination about if he was guilty or not.
Mm-hmm.
He remained in jail because, again, it is just incomplete. So where everybody was prior to it doesn't change. So if he was in jail during the trial, he will remain in jail after the mistrial.
Okay.
And then the prosecution, the state, gets to decide, are we going to try him again?
So you just sit in jail until they figure that out?
Yes, there is a particular amount of time that mm-hmm. the prosecution has to determine if they are going to retry you or not.
Okay.
And usually after a mistrial, attorneys will refile to try to get their client's bond, try to get them out of jail, things like that. So they do try.
Okay, okay.
But just because a mistrial happens doesn't mean you are automatically released. They have to motion to try to get you released, out on bond, whatever. But in the meantime, Melly has been in jail since, right? They tried to get him bond. The judge denied it. And so he has been in jail. And so the same thing with YSL. They've been motioning for mistrials. If that happens, Thug stays. Everybody that is on that is in jail. So all of them would stay in jail and they would start all over. If the prosecution wants to retry, they start all over. It really, again, it's incomplete and mistrial is incomplete and it can be for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
So the YSL case, they keep saying that essentially our clients are not, something has happened during this trial that has now prejudiced, affected our clients in a way that they are not being given a fair trial. Mm-hmm. And so we want to mistry that. We want to stop right now and start all over.
No.
Okay.
That's true. YSL, half them boys are already in jail for other things. So,
well,
yeah. Mistrial or not.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. I hope that's clear. If you are an attorney and want to say more than what I've said or correct me on something I've said, feel free to do so in the comments. Okay, that is the Mel's Mini Bar today. Mm. All right, let's get into Karen Reed.
Dun-dun.
We have a ton of videos that we are going to go through. That has happened, again, over the last couple of days. You want to intro the first clip?
Yes. So everybody has stated they haven't seen anything in the front yard of the Albert's house before or after the party. No one saw anything but this young lady. So let's play this clip.
Wait, can I help with a little bit more
stuff? Yeah,
in case somebody is listening and needs a little bit of context, not much. So again, it's January 29th, 2022.
Oh, yeah, and you're going deep. Okay, go ahead.
It's going to be quick. The group of people have left the waterfall bar and have headed to 34 Fairview Road.
Yep.
Okay. And I actually, let's see if I still have this. Let's just quickly go.
Well, let me explain it. Okay. So I didn't know we was going to get this deep. All right. So everybody's at the house now. Mm-hmm. Okay. But before everybody got there, Brian Albert Jr. was already at home
with his
two friends,
yep.
Sarah and Julie.
Yes.
All right. So party's going on. Sarah and Julie were going to get picked up by Julie's brother.
Yes.
Julie's brother came and Julie decided not to leave with her brother. So Jen McCabe and Matt McCabe said, I'll take you and Sarah home whenever we leave. Right. So that's where we are right now. Mm-hmm. Those two girls, Sarah and Julie, are now getting in the car with Jen McCabe and Matt McCabe.
Yep.
All right.
And Jen is the sister of Nicole Albert, who again owns with her husband Brian Albert, they own 34 Fairview. So it's the sister and her husband are taking Sarah and Julie.
Julie Nagel.
Yes. And that is who we start with. Here we go.
10 vote.
145. I did notice behind Sarah and Jen, I did notice something out of the ordinary, like a black blob in the ground by the flagpole. I was like, I think I might have saw something. I'm not kind of sure what it was, but I was also intoxicated drinking, so didn't really know what I saw. But Sarah was like, what, Julie? And I was like, I don't know what it was. And then that was kind of really it. I'd probably say 5 or 6 feet, like long.
You claim now to have seen a black object in the snow, correct?
Yes.
You never before ever told any investigator that what you actually saw was a black blob. You also never ever told any investigator that this black object that you described was actually 5 feet or 6 feet long, correct?
Correct, yes.
The very first time you're now mentioning this testimony that this black object, as you describe it, was actually 5 or 6 feet long, was just today, after 12 noon on May 14th of 2024. The fact of the matter is, you did nothing, right?
Yeah.
And that's because you did not see a body on that lawn, correct?
I mean, I don't know what I saw, but I saw an object.
When have y'all ever described anything as a blob? When have you seen a blob?
And then have the nerve to act like you know how big it is?
A blob?
5 feet, 6 feet.
If I saw a 6 foot blob, I would be like, hold up,
it's
what is that? Yes.
It blob reminds me of a term like Nickelodeon would use. Like it's like goop. Like, you know, like it's just.
I can't remember. The X-Men.
Yes.
Was he called the blob? He was a big white dude. And I think when you punch him, your arms will go through him because I think his name was the blob.
Okay, well, hold on. Because when you look up blob anyway, I wonder if I can.
The blob. I think that guy's name was the blob. He'll talk. He'll like, I am the blob. come on, man. She's like, I don't know what I saw, but I saw something.
Look up the blob. Look up blob. And it's nothing.
You putting up pictures, do X-Men blob and see. But for her to say that she, yep, there you go. For her to say that and not say, stop. There's a blob.
Yeah.
In the front yard. And then she said, oh, I was drunk. So, you know, I don't know what I saw really. She admitted to being drunk though. So your whole testimony is just bull.
Here's the problem I have with Julie Nagel. It feels like she wants attention, you know, because there've been calling people left and right. No one has ever, no one, including her until that moment, has ever said, yeah, when we were driving, I saw a blob. And I said, hey guys, I think I saw something. And then nobody did. They were like, what? You think you saw something? Oh, we're going to keep driving.
That's what she's like. What you say? Nothing.
Nothing.
He should have asked if the blob had a shoe on.
Or a hat.
Or a hat.
Because what are you even saying, girl? It's giving that you really want attention. And that was dumb. Because now you look dumb. And then the problem is nobody backed her.
No one.
They then call everyone else who was in the car with her when she apparently said there's a blob, and everyone they asked said, no, I didn't hear her say that. Hey, did you, when Julie said blob, did you? No, sorry, I didn't. I was focused on the road. I didn't hear her say that.
Jim McCabe testified and said when she got in the car, she's a little chatterbox. So she literally turned completely around to talk to the girls the whole time. And never heard that statement.
Literally, Tiffany Thompson and Patreon said, I'm sure Jim was like, we did not discuss that. Absolutely.
No.
I think they all were like, what is she doing?
Yeah.
Who told her to do that?
She wants.
Who approved that? Nobody in the conspiracy said say that.
She's going for the shock value, like you said.
They left her to dry. No, we didn't hear that. All right. You want to head to the next one?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Dang, girl, you messed up on that one. But... So after her, they got into, because, you know, everybody's trying to say something's going on with Colin because everybody hasn't been mentioning him at all in any
left
of the
off
reports.
The reports.
So he's left off the reports, left out of everything.
Everything.
Even though everybody testifies that he was there.
He just left.
He just left.
He was there and then he left.
Yeah. So he wasn't there when the thick of the party was 100%. Happening. But he was there in the beginning. So the defense is saying, well, we think Colin had something to do with it. And they're trying to prove that, you know, he might have had a hand in O'Keefe's death. So check this video out and see what they got to say about
it. But what the video is of, so how...
Oh. That's true. So the entire time, everybody was saying he left, right?
Colin
saying, I'm leaving. I'm waiting on my ride. For some reason, No one knew who was picking him up.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it was literally his cousin picking him up. And he ain't even mentioned that. So his cousin ends up coming to pick him up and they were exchanging texts. So this is what this is about to explain.
At 11:54, I texted Allie and said, "You can get me now, period."
You were asked yesterday about certain texts with your cousin Allie.
Correct.
Allie is obviously family.
Yes.
But she's more than family. She's also a good friend of yours.
Correct.
As a matter of fact, she's one of your best friends.
Correct. Yes.
And then if you scroll down a little bit, after the end of that text string that ends at 12:10 a.m. and it says okay, you see the next date?
February 20th.
That's nearly a month later. So there was a gap after January 29th, 2022, when you found out that a man had ended up dead on your uncle's lawn, and you and Allie did not text each other for a month, not once. Isn't it true, Mr. Albert, that you either switched platforms or deleted the texts because you did not want your text communications with Allie McCabe to be discovered?
That's not true.
So my thing is, if somebody just died in my front yard or in anybody's front yard that I knew of, me and my best friend would be texting back and forth like crazy. We would not let a whole month go by without texting. So that gap, that month gap, they had to erase their text messages.
Okay, but here's I have more things because this is so stupid. They're dumb. Colin is at 34 Fairview. Allie McCabe comes to pick him up. Mind you, this house is her family too. So the fact that everybody who testified is like, yeah, Colin just said his ride was coming, but we didn't know who it was. It's just weird because why wouldn't you be like, oh yeah, I'm about to leave. Allie's coming. Hey, Allie's here. Mind you, these are Allie's aunts and uncles. These are Allie's cousins. It's Brian Albert Jr.'s birthday, which means it's her cousin's birthday. So nobody knows it's her coming to pick him up. And when she gets there, it's snowing. I get it. But you don't go inside. Not to mention, your mom is coming. Your mom, Jen McCabe, is Allie McCabe's mother. Matt McCabe is Allie McCabe's father. So you come and pick him up. Your parents are either there or on the way. And you don't even, nobody knows it's you that's coming to get him. That's stupid. That doesn't make sense to me.
Allie McCabe is the daughter
of Jen McCabe.
Colin was saying that that's his second cousin.
Colin Albert. Yes.
He said that's my cousin's cousin.
Yes. Because think about it. Jen McCabe is the sister to Nicole Albert.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Brian Albert, who is Nicole's husband,
mm-hmm.
his brother is.
Oh, that's why she said
the other Albert, Chris Albert. So Colin Albert is Chris Albert's son.
Mm-hmm.
And then Allie McCabe is. So they're actually through marriage.
Marriage.
They're not like direct. However,
well, damn.
They already said, yeah, we're always together at the family events.
Yeah.
He said, that's my best friend. Y'all know each other.
Mm-hmm.
How come nobody knew she was the one that was coming to pick him up? That just makes no sense.
Yep.
It just makes, you would have said, you wouldn't have said my ride. You would have said, Allie's coming to get me.
Yep.
It just doesn't make sense. In addition to that, they're besties. They talk all the time. What is going on all over the internet and all over this Patreon is the screenshot of the text message. So this is the text exchange, if you are watching and not listening. It's a text exchange between Colin and Allie when he's at the house and he's like, yo, you can come get me. I'm obviously at 34 Fairview is the implication here. You can come get me now if it's easier. Here's the thing. The date on this text message says January 28th, comma, 2022, comma. There's a comma after 2022.
Somebody's been touching something.
That just doesn't make sense. There's two commas in the date. Why is there a comma after 2022,
mm-hmm.
honey?
Y'all go look in your phones. Check your phones yes. all the way back as far as you can.
You're like, where's my phone?
The dates are never set up like that. That Girl, comma is never there.
The comma is after the year.
Yes.
It's after it's the never number there. Date, January 28th, but it's also after the year. In addition to that,
it just seems fraudulent.
Well,
okay.
Yes.
That's what we're saying.
But in addition to that, when you keep letting it run, it turn it's 11:55, 12:10, 12:10, and then the day changes. When the day changes, when the clock strikes midnight, it's a new day. And that's just how the world works. It's a new day.
Mm-hmm.
So why would a text that came in at 12:10 be, why would the new day on this text message start after the 12:10 text messages? The thing about phones is that they are computers. They are programmed. They operate. It's the same reason that when daylight savings times happens, your phone just changes time.
Yeah.
You know why? Because it'd be knowing stuff. It just knows. Why wouldn't the phone just know that 12:10, a text message sent after 12:10 means that it is now the following day?
Technology is a double-edged sword.
It makes no sense.
You gonna play with it. You best to know what you're doing.
It makes no sense.
Somebody's messed up and put that comma there. And the internet does what the internet does.
And that's exactly what happened. The lawyer didn't even call it out. I mean, obviously they went through these text messages, but the lawyer didn't even call it out. I'm not sure what you do, they're good. These attorneys are good. But I don't even, what do you say? Hey, isn't it so weird that there's a comma there? In the middle of trial, I would have been screaming.
They all were probably like,
oh my God. And noting again, the 12:10 is a part of the 19th, but not the 20th. And then to the point you're making, these text messages happen and then no text. And then you guys are best friends.
Yes.
And then you just don't text each other after somebody is found dead. And the house in front of the house that both of y'all are related to. Girl, y'all playing with me.
And now that you say that about him saying, hey, my ride is coming, and not mentioning her name. So the family is just trying to hide their family.
Yes.
Don't even mention her so she won't be involved.
Absolutely.
Don't say Colin was here so he won't be involved. That eliminates them completely.
Yes.
But no. It don't work like that.
It makes no sense.
Okay, so I jumped the gun and I was explaining something that I was supposed to be explaining now.
Okay.
Earlier.
Okay.
So this next video is basically showing you all who Colin really is.
Hilarious. That's your setup?
That's my setup. And this is why we feel like Colin has something to do with the situation.
This is why you feel like, I don't know if Colin had any. Let me stop. All right. Colin's on the stand.
Yes, this is why I feel like.
And this is during cross-examination.
This is during cross-examination. They're asking him, has he ever been in a physical altercation?
I want to draw your attention to February 26th, same month, less than a month after the incident. You were at a place called Fenway Johnny's with your buddies, weren't you? You see that photograph that's being displayed?
Yes.
Are you in that photograph?
In the middle.
I want you to take a look at your right hand.
It's cut up.
And on February 26th, less than a month after the incident at Fairview, that's what your right knuckles look like, correct?
Correct. I was at a party, a house party my senior year. And it was, I remember it being icy out. And it was kind of like a steep hill of a driveway. And I was walking up the driveway and I slipped down the driveway and I tried to catch myself. I had something in my left hand. So I tried to brace myself with my right hand and I ended up sliding a little bit down the driveway. If I remember, it was either my phone or a beverage.
Y'all, I keep mentioning X-Men. This man thought he was Wolverine and he could shoot his blades out and stop himself on concrete. He was using his knuckles to brace himself. First of all, if you have your phone in your hand and you fall, let's demonstrate.
I want you to fall. If you are listening,
I have my phone in my hand. I fall. He's saying he does this to brace himself. I have a drink in my hand. He says he falls and turns this way to brace himself on the concrete. How do you fix your mouth? How do you fix your mouth to say this? That is crazy. Also, I used to box. Where I went to boxing lessons for like 9 months. And when you box, it tears your knuckles up. That heavy bag will take the skin off. But I can only imagine being a white boy, it's going to really show like that on his knuckles. So he was hitting something, and for it to be bruised like that, there was no scraping. No. Of the situation that he would have had scrapes. He literally had, he was hitting something.
I want you, everyone, fall. If you are listening right now, fall right now and tell me what your natural instinct is to do. Tell me, if matter of fact, go push somebody and watch them fall. And tell me if they try to catch themselves with their knuckles.
Push a baby down.
Don't push my baby though.
A baby gonna go like, ah. No one does this but Wolverine, man.
Nobody is balling their fist up to try to catch. That don't even, you're going to break your wrist. Man, you are going to injure yourself.
Man, a mutant.
I don't understand. Again, here's the question. I want the conspiracy of the Alberts and the McCabes, because I want to understand. Did y'all prove that lie? Were y'all in the meeting when he said, this what I'm going to say? Who said, yes, Colin, that's it. Get up on that stand and say that.
That
because the jurors are going to love it. They're going to be like, absolutely. I do that all the time.
I didn't understand. You know, I'm not with Colin at all, but why didn't you say I was, you know, hitting the heavy bag or boxing?
He was like so resistant to even saying that he boxes or practices, or like, I'm an athlete and a part of our practices is to hit a heavy bat. Like, there's so many explanations that he could have went with, and this man said, I had my phone in my hand and my drink in my hand, it was icy out, and I caught myself with my knuckle.
He could have said he was doing push-ups. Push-ups on his knuckles.
Knuckle push-ups.
Yeah.
I still would have looked crazy at that one, but it's better than falling, because everybody has fallen.
Uphill.
It just don't make no sense. All right, and then this is my favorite one. This is my favorite clip ever.
Yes, this is. This is the best of the best. This just reiterates his who he is as a person.
And I just want to say two things. This is still during cross-examination, and I have said it and I will always say it. Karen's defense team is one of one. These people are amazing. They are good at what they do.
They are good, but it's hard not to be good. When you have these ignorant people testifying, just they don't know how to cover up anything properly.
Yes. I should also say, they are good because they're funny and they're snarky.
They're very blunt. They're,
yeah, that's why I'm saying they're good. Yeah. Because everybody don't bring personality. Everybody don't bring seasoning and a little zazz.
Yeah.
These attorneys are spicy.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with you on that one.
All right.
You ever been in a fight, sir?
Other than with my brothers, no.
You know, you're being foolish. I will beat all your asses. I promise you, I will fuck you all up. Pull up, bitch.
Fuck you. Yeah, fuck you.
You're saying on that video?
That I would beat them up.
Did you say you would beat them up, or did you say, I will fuck you up?
I said, I will F you up.
No, you didn't say, I will F you up. What did you actually say?
That I would fuck them up.
You also said something about beating somebody's ass, right?
Correct.
What did that mean?
That I would beat them up.
So when you said, I will fuck you up and I will beat your ass, was that a friendly invitation?
No.
It was a threat, correct?
I don't know if I would call it a threat.
You don't?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think you are sure, sir. Explain that to me.
I'm not sure. Like, explain what I said.
Is that a threat?
Yeah.
Pull up, bitch, right?
Yeah.
What does pull up mean?
Like, come by?
Yeah, meaning get over here, right?
Yep.
Because when you do, I'm going to fuck you up, right?
Yeah.
Meaning I'm going to fight you and I'm going to put you down, correct?
Correct.
That was your threat to them.
Correct.
I should have gave the warning that there was going to be curse words in that. I'm sorry if you were listening and
bang, bang!
Not prepared for the cursing, but the cursing is the seasoning. Remember how I just said? You remember how I just said the song? Hey. Because the video... Listen, Colin was on there like, bang, bang, pull up, bitch. And then Action Jackson, okay, he gonna follow up and he gonna make him say it. What did you say? Mm-hmm. That I would fight them. No, no, no. you didn't say fight didn't that say I would that. That I would F them up. No, no, no. You didn't say F them up. What did you say, Colin? Colin, say the word.
I said pull up. That's what I said. I said I was going to F them up.
You know when you get in trouble and then when you get caught, your mama be, no, no, no. You were so big and bad then. Mm-hmm. Run it back right now. And you be like, well, no, it's not as fun. Anyway.
Colin.
Pull up and bang, bang.
Yeah. Bang, bang.
Is my favorite thing out of this whole trial. Bang, and bang. I will forever for the rest of my life be saying bang, bang. Because it's so funny.
Yeah.
Why was he on that video saying that? And then why did Alan Jackson, why did he then proceed to repeat it multiple times in a courtroom?
Was that a threat?
I don't think so. You don't think that's a threat? You don't think that's a threat? Oh my God. Okay. So after Colin, there were more witnesses, but again, we are highlighting the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
And Jen McCabe comes to the witness stand. Jen McCabe is so key to this whole story.
Yes.
Because she, again, is Ally McCabe's mother, but she also is the main one who invited Karen Reed and John O'Keefe to the Alberts' house. Mm-hmm. Okay. She is the one. She, in the video, apparently was like pulling Karen, saying, you're coming with me. Let's go to the house, like doing all this stuff, right? Trying to get them to go, allegedly. So she gets to the house and she, again, is the person, her and her husband took Sarah Levinson and Julie Nagel home from 34 Fairview. She left later from 34 Fairview. She wasn't the last person, but her and Matt and the others, they left later in the evening from 34 Fairview. And then Jennifer McCabe is important because the next morning when Karen Reed woke up and realized that John O'Keefe was not home,
mm-hmm.
she called, or she had the niece call Jennifer McCabe, and she was, oh my gosh, the clip is so, Jen. Basically, John's not here. Okay. And so Karen and Jen and Carrie Roberts, who is another woman, they together go out on the morning of January 29, 2022 to go searching for John O'Keefe's body. So Jen McCabe was with Karen when they found his body in front of 34 Fairview, which again is Jen McCabe's, that's her sister and her brother-in-law's house. So she is really, really key to this whole story. And I know the defense attorneys were waiting to do cross-examination on her, and it was so worth it. It was so worth it. Mm-hmm. If you, I promise you, it was so worth it. So one of the things that they highlight up front is about the layout of 34 Fairview. And one of, I think we talked about it last week and showed the video, that it is a big yard. Okay. And so that is essentially what they're highlighting with her. So I'll play the clip and then we obviously will talk about it a little bit, but here we go. Good. This is a still shot. If you're watching, it's a still shot of 34 Fairview. Okay. The road. Well, you see all that snow is the yard. You see that flagpole to the left. That's going to be important for you to know. Flagpole's over there. And then that's the road, right? That's Fairview Road.
As you looked over that flat lawn with that good and clear view of the SUV, you could see the SUV and everything between you and the SUV, correct?
When I looked out the front window, I could see the SUV clearly, like I'm looking at you right now, and it was further away than you are.
And you did it not once. Twice, not three times, five times, and then a sixth after it was gone, correct?
Correct.
And after that SUV was gone, and you looked out that window with that clear and good view, there was no body, was there?
I never saw a body.
Thank you.
I wish I had.
Sounds like that's a little rehearsed.
Not at all. It's not at all.
I wish I had.
A little bit of context, a little more context is what they're speaking about is Jennifer McCabe was texting John O'Keefe as he and Karen Reed pulled up to 34 Fairview that night. So she's texting, hey, are you here? Hey, pull behind me, texting him. And so she testified that at another proceeding every time she would text him, she would get back up and go look out the window to see where the black SUV, that's Karen's car, where it was parked, where it was. So she said when she looked out the door, the window, it was parked directly in front of the door, essentially, right? Like on that part of the street. You could see it as you opened the door. It was direct line of view. And so he is saying, so you looked at it and the vehicle was there. And then you looked again, vehicle was there. You looked again. So you look a total of 5 times. When you look the 6th time, the vehicle has now left. Karen is no longer there. And if what you're claiming, which is that Karen hit him and then left, when you looked at that 6th time, how come you didn't see nobody?
And the snow was just like starting to fall down and stick.
And you can see in that video, in the picture, I'm going to run it one more time. If nothing's obstructing her view and she is looking from that door, you can see directly to the street. How you miss a body? How you miss a body? Mm. Where was the body, Jen? Where was the body?
Yeah. That's flat. You're going to see something.
It's clear.
Yeah. And then McCabe had black on, dark.
Where
clothes.
Was the blob? You should have saw the blob.
You should have saw the blob.
So we all know that the Alberts, Brian and Nicole Albert, had rehomed before they rehomed. They had a dog named Chloe.
Yes.
A German Shepherd.
Yes.
A big old dog that, yep. Those are the kind of police dogs, right? Police dogs have
by
German
nature.
Shepherds.
By nature, they're
nosy.
Nosy and protective.
And protective.
Yes.
And so
family oriented dogs.
The story that Jen McCabe and everybody in the McCabes and the Alberts have told is that when Jen and Karen and Carrie Roberts arrived that morning in front of 34 Fairview, when they discovered John O'Keefe's body laying in the snow, Jen McCabe at some point goes to wake up her brother, her sister and brother-in-law, because remember all these ambulances, police, Karen Reed screaming, and apparently they sleep. They don't hear a thing. He's a police officer and they don't hear a thing, honey. Yep. They are just, whoo. And so because they are not waking up, Jen McCabe goes inside the house, which of course the door just happened to be unlocked, because even though they're police officers, apparently they frequently leave their door unlocked. And so Jen McCabe bursts in the house, runs upstairs, because again, it's a body, it's her friend on the lawn. So she's running upstairs,
yep.
And she goes to wake up her sister and brother-in-law to tell them that John O'Keefe is on your lawn. And so this is what the defense has to say about that.
Yes.
What was the dog's name?
Chloe.
On the morning of January 29th, mm-hmm. after 6 a.m., you burst into the bedroom of Brian and Nicole Alberts. Where was Chloe?
I don't know.
So you'll agree that, at least from their perspective, you walked in the front door unexpectedly. You walked upstairs unexpectedly. You walked through their door, and you said you burst into the door into a dark room where they were sleeping. Mr. Albert said that you were somewhat hysterical, and you don't remember a 70-pound German Shepherd having any reaction.
No.
You never saw that dog, correct?
I have no memory of seeing that dog.
Okay, so as you sit here today, mm-hmm. you cannot say that the dog was here because you don't have a memory of ever seeing it.
Right? I did not see it, no.
Anybody with a dog, even a mild-tempered dog, barks. Yeah. Like, hey, somebody's here.
Monty.
Or something's going
Melissa
on.
Melissa and Kevin's dog, Monty,
will bark.
And that little dog ain't about nothing. He ain't about nothing in his life. He ain't. You come up to him, he gonna run.
And before you get to the door, the dog feels your presence and it barks. And the dog knows us and it still barks at us.
If you have a dog that doesn't bark at people or tell you something's happened, you should get rid of that dog. And if, especially if it's a German Shepherd. If you have a German Shepherd,
70-pound dog,
and it is not reacting to somebody bursting in your house, in your room,
sleep at night, dark,
turn it in. Get a refund. Get another one.
Come on.
That dog ain't doing what it was created to do, and you should get your money back.
And they were saying that the dog is an aggressive dog,
yes.
Especially towards other dogs. So this dog is upbeat. It's not no slouch.
Well, they said the night before they testified that the dog was
going crazy
at people and reacting. And so Brian Albert put the dog away because it doesn't like people and it doesn't like noise. So how it go from going crazy hours before?
Can y'all imagine?
And now it's in such a deep sleep, honey, that it don't got time.
The noise that had to be made with her.
Yeah. Chaotic. Hysterical.
Hey, y'all. Hey.
Wake up.
Everybody. Hey, hey, hey.
And the dog is like.
But the feet, the steps coming up the stairs. The feet steps going up the stairs to the room.
And it's just chilling.
You heard that coming.
Dogs react when you turn the handle on a door. Dogs react
in the driveway.
Dogs bark at their shadow.
They chase their own tails.
Explain to me.
Come on.
How a dog is not reacting to that. It just.
Brian said the dog was sleeping in the closet, so the dog probably didn't hear nothing.
And Action Jackson said, "Oh, so now Chloe's in the closet, huh? Now the dog's in the closet. That's what you want to go with."
Yeah.
All right. Next clip is this is ridiculous. So Keri Roberts, we have to talk about Keri Roberts because again, Keri Roberts is the third person who went with Jen and Karen Reed that morning to find John O'Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
And she comes across, she did testify after Jen. She comes across as somebody like she has a long history with the O'Keefe family.
Mm-hmm.
She really seemed to like love and care about John O'Keefe, like in a friendly way, like that was her boy. And you know, that like they had a very caring relationship. And my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer nor a juror in this trial, and yet I have an opinion, is that the McCabes and the Alberts were able to influence her, whether she knows it or not, influence her in what she should think and say and do. She may be so distraught and whatever, and she's just going like, yeah, you guys are right. Karen killed him. And so what you're saying, especially in memory, is such a funny thing. It starts to, well, if they're saying this and he's saying this, maybe that's what happened. And so I feel like she could be unknowingly, right, a part of this conspiracy, but again, unknowingly. And so anyway, this next clip talks about that Keri was over at the McCabe's home when police came and spoke to her. And just listen to how it goes. Keri is at the McCabe's home doing an interview, a conversation with police. Here we go.
Matt McCabe texts, quote, "This girl could write a book, ... nonstop." Correct?
Correct.
So obviously Matt McCabe, along with you, was listening to Keri Roberts in her interview.
We were sitting in the kitchen eating dinner with our children, and Keri Roberts was in a different room, but she was going on and on and on, as she does, because they were in the other room.
And you could listen.
I could hear voices.
You could hear her interview with the police.
Did not hear her interview. I could hear them talking, but I was sitting at a table with my children eating dinner, getting ready to go to a basketball game.
You then responded to Matt McCabe, "I love it."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you responded, quote, "She is telling them everything."
Yes.
End quote. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what you said just a few minutes ago about not knowing what she was saying, I could just hear voices, that was a lie. And a couple of seconds later, Nicole Albert responds, one word.
Good.
At the end of the day, you were eavesdropping on an interview that Keri Roberts was having with law enforcement in their official capacity, weren't you?
No, I was sitting eating dinner, and some of the things, obviously, I overheard, but I was not eavesdropping. I'm saying there's a possibility if I'm sitting in this room eating dinner and someone's in another room talking, you can hear bits and pieces. Was I eavesdropping? No. Is there some big cover-up story? No.
She's telling them everything. Now it's, well, I may have heard a couple of things. Which is it?
No, she was going on and on and on like she does.
And you were listening on and on and on like you do.
I was probably hearing bits and pieces. So I was happy for her that she was piecing it all together and I had pieced it all together because at the end of the day, our friend was dead and we were trying to figure out what had happened to him together. There was no direction. We were all trying to figure out what had happened because that's what you do when you lose somebody you love.
And you were listening on and on and on like you do.
I wasn't listening. I just heard some things.
Why would he say that?
It went with it. It flowed with it.
Why would he say that to this woman in this trial?
She tripped me out, man. Just admit that you was eavesdropping. Why you got to... Look, I was eating dinner and we heard it. And I sat there and I listened because I could.
And you're texting the group. You're texting the Alberts.
Yeah.
The what's update happening? About what's happening. She's telling them every, and that's why I said she may not have known. It's as if they like infiltrated her mind. What's that movie? Conception. Amen. Because conception is something different.
Yep.
Inception. They inceptioned her. It's like they inceptioned her mind with the story, and she's just like repeating it. And they're like, yes, it's working. Like, those are the vibes I get. That's essentially what it seems like he was trying to put across. Of course, she had her version of events, but it just was like, girl, of course you were listening. And it's absurd to think that you wouldn't. If something happened in my house, everybody who's talking about it, I'm trying to hear what you got to say. Yeah. I'm naturally. And then you at my house. I'm absolutely my ears to the door.
That's what I'm saying. I don't see why she was so offensive about the whole situation. Yeah, I'm eating. Then the crazy part is that he's interviewing Roberts in their home.
And she ain't even at her house.
Why is she over? What?
She at the other? What? Who? And, do something.
And the thing about it is, we got to take her word for it that they were in another room.
Yes.
All three of them were probably eating dinner together talking about this situation. All four, my bad, because that includes, wasn't that Officer Lank that was over there?
It probably was. I don't remember.
Yeah,
she's so defensive, but I go back and forth about this. Because if you are accusing me of something I know I didn't do, I would be defensive as well. She doesn't come across as just like regular, you're accusing me of something defensive, but maybe this is just my bias because I don't believe her. But like, I don't know. I go back and forth about what is the version of a person who's telling the truth and being accused of something they didn't do? Like, what does that even look like? How do you know?
You don't. You're not able to poke holes in the truth like that.
All right, that's a good point.
When she bust in the door, she would have said, the dog came down, met me at the door.
Yeah.
Or when I kicked open the door, the dog was there, damn near attacked me, you know.
Yeah.
When I did eavesdrop because they were in my house.
Yeah,
so I did. Matter of fact, I didn't have to eavesdrop. I was listening
because
I wasn't trying to hide anything. They were right here in my house. Their stories, you just poke holes in and it's like, you're lying, man.
Yeah.
And that's why we all feel like something else is up. It's just your stories don't jive. That's all.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, the next video, let me play it. During that conversation, something comes up. I'm going to play it, and then it may be better for you to hear, and then I put it together.
There's yet another text from Brian's wife, Nicole, on January 29th, and this is on page 2226. We'll get more info tomorrow. Don't want to text about it, end quote. And then you texted, right, correct?
Correct.
What's that about?
We decided that we would talk on the phone. My children look on my phone. Her children look on her phone. It was nothing more than let's not text about it. Not secret and private. We just weren't going to communicate certain things over text.
Okay, what did Mr. Tully tell you, Trooper Tully? What exactly did he tell you at this meeting about this Michael Lank issue?
He said, did you go to Michael Lank's on January 30th? And at first I said, no, I've never been to his house. And then I thought about it and I said, oh my gosh, yes, I did go there. And that was the extent of the conversation.
You said, yeah, I did go there, and he didn't ask a follow-up. Like, what the heck were you doing at Michael Blake's house the day after this issue?
Objection.
I'll allow it.
He didn't ask a follow-up like that?
I do not believe he did.
So, Trooper Tully, had you come down for an interview, he confronted you with a fact that had never been disclosed before, to wit, you showed up at Michael Blake's house, and when you said, yeah, oh yeah, hang on, I think your words were, oh my gosh, yeah, I think I did go there. And he didn't ask a follow-up question?
Yes, you're spinning all of this.
Ma'am, I do a lot of things.
Yeah.
I don't spin. There's a judge here to make sure that I don't spin. I'm asking you a question. It's very direct.
I do not believe he asked me a follow-up question.
So that was the end of that conversation about Michael, correct?
Correct.
All right.
There was a follow-up.
Let me put it together now that you've heard that. On January 29th, they're texting, and then she says, we're going to have more information tomorrow. Okay, and so she, and whatever, we're not going to text about it. And so she lies and said, it's because my damn near grown kids look in my phone and that's why we didn't want to text about it. Okay, that's a stupid lie. But what the follow-up is and what he was actually trying to get out of her, that we don't, my kids look was an extra lie she didn't have to add. But what he was actually getting at is that a year plus later, what's discovered is that when she said, we're going to find out more information tomorrow, that was January 29th. On January 30th, okay,
mm-hmm.
she goes to Michael Lenk's house, the detective, the lead investigator on the case. She goes to his house. According to her, we just stopped by because the kids are friends and we didn't even talk to Michael Lenk. He wasn't even there. We talked to his wife and we were there for like an hour in the car, in the snow, but like the heat was on, but like we were just talking. But I don't know why you're asking me about this, because even though I texted on the 29th and said, we're going to find out more tomorrow. And then the next day I went to the lead investigator's house. They're not related, essentially, is what you just heard.
Yeah. So he doesn't have a follow-up question for that one.
And so what she's saying is Tully, the person who discovered this extra meeting on the 30th, is saying, so this happened. And she was like, no, he didn't ask anything else about it. The investigator just left it at that, which makes no sense.
No sense, man.
Also, you guys are dumb.
This is what I'm saying.
Why would you text? We're going to find out more information tomorrow. And then it's learned that you went to the lead investigator's house the very next day. Nobody was gonna put that together.
That's why we think you're lying, because of comments like that. This whole situation, you're not gonna text about it, but y'all went to his house the next
day. Because my kids look in my text message.
What world does this? Well, it happens in this world that you're able to go to the lead investigator's house on a case that you're being tried, like you're a witness in. Hey,
that you're a witness in. That's what's crazy.
How are you able? Yeah. When this was found out, the lead investigator, for one, should have been fired like set off for another case. Somebody else, third party, should have definitely came in and prosecuted him. Like, how are you having this person in your house with your wife talking about, supposedly just with your wife, talking about the case?
But even if it was just the wife, to think that the wife didn't get the tea from the husband then tell to them is silly.
Yeah.
Of course she knows all the tea. She's asking him, what happened today? What's the update? What's the tea? I'm going to call the girls over later so I can tell them. Duh.
Mel used to come home all the time and tell me about Netflix.
And everywhere else I worked.
Yeah, everybody.
Because that's what happens.
Mm-hmm. You tell Mel, she going to tell me.
Hello.
Guaranteed. I know.
Now nobody gonna tell me nothing. Dang. Why would you say that?
Dang. Okay, we just edit that out. Only Patreon, though.
All right. Now we're getting to the best parts of Jen McCabe's testimony, the last two videos.
Oh, y'all thought everything else was good. You thought her not seeing a dog was good. You thought her not seeing what was we talking about? Chloe, the dog. We talked about her being at Officer Lank's house.
So
butt dialing O'Keefe.
January 28th, 2022, right? It's the evening of, they pull up to 34 Fairview. And John is texting Jen McCabe, calling and texting, right? About going to the house, how to get there, all of that. And there is a discrepancy because, of course, John O'Keefe's records, phone records were pulled and analyzed. And then Jen McCabe's phone records were pulled and analyzed. And there is a discrepancy between the two regarding how many times the two phones, one person called the other or the other person called the other, okay? So that is the context. Here's the clip.
There was a call at 12:14 a.m. There was a call at 12:18 and 47 seconds. Then there's the 12:29 and 44 second call. There was a 12:41 call from you to John O'Keefe. There was a 12:41 and 54 second call from you to him. There was a 12:43 and 19 second call from you to him. 12:46 a.m. and 16 seconds from you to him, 12:47 and 52 seconds from you to him, and 12:50 and 37 seconds from you to him, correct?
Correct.
And Ms. McCabe, according to the extraction reports that you've seen this morning, comparing yours to his, every single one of those calls was deleted off your phone, according to the reports.
According to that report, yes.
Let me ask you another question. Have you ever misplaced your phone?
Yes.
In life, everybody does, right?
Yes.
What's one of the first things you do if you're with your daughter or your husband or a friend and you're in your house and you misplace your phone? What do you do?
I'll ask them to call my phone.
Even over and over and over, right?
Usually I hear it the first or second time.
You're looking for a buzz or a ring, isn't that right?
Correct.
And you might do that if you're searching for a missing phone, correct?
Correct.
With regard to the calls that were deleted from your phone, you were asked about this under oath at another proceeding, weren't you?
Correct.
And you claimed at another proceeding that you had an explanation for all these missed calls at your other at this other proceeding, mm-hmm. which were under oath.
Yes.
Right. You explained that these calls were what? These missed calls, incessant missed calls. What were they? You used a word. I recognize two words.
I believe I used the word butt dials.
You claimed that every one of these calls was a butt dial. Is that right?
Yes.
So according to you, you literally butt dialed John O'Keefe's phone 6 times in the span of 19 minutes. Is that right?
I don't remember making any of those calls. So my assumption is I put my phone in my back pocket and that was it.
And that was it.
You all,
I
do physical. Well, I used to do physical labor for work and my phone would be in my pocket. I would be in the attic of homes, in the attic of this studio, running wire, putting up sheetrock. You all seen this, it's documented. My phone was in my pocket the entire time. I got a tool belt hitting my side. I'm rubbing against walls. I'm crawling. I'm doing all type of stuff. My phone did not butt dial anybody. Not one time.
And somebody, they brought it up in the trial and somebody in Patreon is saying it. There was not a single voicemail that was left. The thing about a butt dial
mm-hmm.
is that you don't know it's happening.
Yep.
And so when that person doesn't answer,
mm-hmm.
and in this case, John wouldn't have answered because he may have been not alive at that point. So if you are calling his phone, that's not being answered.
Yep.
It would go to voicemail. And because you're unaware that your phone is calling him, you would leave a very long, empty voicemail.
Yep.
And yet there were no voicemails left on John O'Keefe's phone.
Yep.
Also, the idea that you can butt dial somebody 6 times in 19 minutes, how does that, how would that keep happening? How would you be, and so to the point of the voicemail, so then the voicemail at some point, it's whenever the time span runs out, it hangs up and your butt is so smart that it recalls it and leaves mm-hmm. another voicemail, hangs up, recalls it. And yet none of that seemed to happen. It just doesn't make sense. So the fact that he was able to quickly say, what happens when you misplace your phone?
Mm.
What happened? And the thing is, let me put the thing back up because it wasn't every call that was missing from hers. It was, okay. So the first 1, 2, 3, those calls you can see when answered. Well, yep. Yeah, those calls went answered and they have a duration, 44 minutes, 36 minutes, 8 minutes. But then you get to 1241, 1241, 1243, 1246, 1247, 1250. Those are the calls that were missing from her call log. Those you see went all unanswered. And the time frame in which they're happening, right, is much, it's more rapid. Because mm-hmm. you were looking for the baby phone, honey. You were looking for the baby phone.
This also is, this is what I'm getting from it. It seems like at that time, that 12:30 time, John could have been hurt at that time.
Yeah.
And now they're looking for his phone. And if that happened at that time, that means there's a possibility everybody was still at that home at 12:30, right? Because everybody was saying they left around 12:10, 12:15.
Which, remember, they were trying to push it all up. And mm-hmm. so, because when I first was looking at, I was like, that means they got to that baby quick. He entered into the house and they dropped him quick.
Yeah.
That's what it would indicate to me. But everybody was saying, assault don't take a long time. Assault and battery don't take a long time. Attacks don't have to take a long time. So maybe mm-hmm. they was waiting for him at the door. I don't really know.
That
was a bar.
That's where I'm so, my hands are up because how did this happen? How did it happen that fast? What were they thinking? Because at the bar, no one showed any signs of animosity. It would almost seem like you're saying they're like, come on in here, John. And they're all just waiting for him.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem likely.
It's weird.
It's so weird. And that's what I'm saying. If they didn't have anything to do with it, this would have been sold up real quick.
Yeah.
The truth would have been out there. But now we're all, well, they're chasing their tails, and we're trying to like, what really happened?
Something ain't making sense.
Something ain't making sense.
All right, let's get to the other one because we've been here a while, and I still need to go through what I need to go through. So one of the things that has been infamous about this case is this Google search that was How Long to Die in the Cold that apparently was done at the hands of Jen McCabe. Jen McCabe on direct examination testified that, and of course, direct happens before cross. So on direct examination, she testified that when they pulled up, okay, to 34 Fairview that morning, discovered John in the snow. Ambulance comes. They get in the vehicle. Okay, they're in a car waiting. And Karen Reed tells Jen McCabe to search, how long does it take to die in the cold? And so there is a Google search from Jen McCabe's phone at 6:34, I believe. And she's like, yeah, your client, essentially, Karen Reed, the defendant, told me to search that. And so that's why I searched it. On cross-examination, something else happened. And this is the clip of how that went for Jen McCabe. Here we go.
After you opened up Safari, you indicated that you Google searched something about ozone basketball. Is that right?
Yes.
That was sometime after 2 a.m. Was there anything else on your mind in that early morning hour time frame?
Don't believe so.
Ms. McCabe, if you wanted to know in general how long it takes for a human being to pass away because of exposure to extreme temperatures, right? If you wanted to know the answer to that, what would you Google search? What phrase would you use?
I'm not sure. All I recall is what the defendant asked me to Google in the morning.
Well, we don't have to guess at the phrase that you would use. If you wanted to know something about dying of hypothermia, do we? Did you actually Google search this?
I did in the morning at the request of your client.
Okay. And what phrase did you use?
I'm not sure.
Really?
Correct. I was.
After 2.5 years of this, you don't know the phrase that you used? What does that Google search say?
How long to die in cold.
Now, you indicate that you did that, you made that search at 6:23 a.m., correct?
Correct.
And then you indicated that you did it again thereafter at 6:24, correct?
Correct.
You claimed that you searched it because Karen was screaming at you and yelling at you, Google hypothermia, and you're aware, Ms. McCabe, that both spellings, both misspellings of that phrase result in the exact same search results.
I'm not aware of that, no.
So my question to you is, why the two searches?
She was standing next to me screaming, shaking my hand. My hand was cold. I was trying to Google it. Obviously, maybe whatever came up first didn't make sense because I had some misspellings, so I did it again.
Why do it again, Ms. McCabe? You had the result. Why the second search?
I cannot answer that beyond telling you that my hands were frozen, she was shaking me and screaming at me.
You see this first search that says, "Hoss long to die in cold"?
I do.
What's that time?
2:27.
A.M. or P.M.?
A.M.
You made that search at 2:27 A.M., because you knew that John O'Keefe was outside in your sister's lawn dying in the cold, didn't you?
Absolutely not. I did not make that search at that time. No.
You realized the next morning, after John was discovered, after 6 a.m., that you had an incriminating search on your phone. To cover your tracks, you searched it again in order to overwrite the original search at 2:27, correct?
Again, absolutely not.
But you were nervous and you screwed it up. So the first search you made at 6:23 was "Hoss long to die in CIKD."
I see the search, but I disagree with your narrative.
And then of those three searches, one of them ended up deleted. Isn't that right? Take a look at the Cellebrite report. Top search in the column marked deleted. What do you see?
I see a yes. I did not delete that search. I never made that search at 2:23. I never would have left John O'Keefe out in the cold to die because he was my friend that I loved.
But he's not your family, is he?
Family and friends.
Girl.
I love how she she always trying to end something emotional she and is. Dramatic. And we love our family, and this is for him, and we're here to support, and we're trying to find it out for each other.
Let me make sure this is very clear, because it's really important that this is very clear. Okay, I need y'all to understand what happened. Okay, January 28th, they leave, or going into the 29th. Okay, they leave 34 Fairview. At two, this is what the report says. At 2:27 a.m., she Googled house, H-O-S, long to die in the cold. Okay. The next morning, when they are out at 34 Fairview, discover the body. And she says that Karen Reed now says, hey, Google how long to die in the cold. What Action Jackson just said is she did the search, but she messed up because instead of making it exact to her 2:27 search, she mistakenly put how with the W, T-I for two, and then C-I-K-D for cold. What she was trying to do was mimic exactly the 2:27 a.m. search so that it would override, and this story that the machines, the phones just messed up somehow would be able to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But she searched it twice because the first time she screwed up. And so what he's saying is,
yep.
Because Google is smart and understands misspellings, when you Googled it the first time with the misspelling C-I-K-D and T-I, Google was smart enough to still give you results. So when you Googled it the second time and changed up to make it match, you still got the same results. So if you got the same results both times,
mm-hmm.
why did you have to Google it twice? You got the same answer. What was the point? And then only one of those is deleted.
Yes. So,
girl,
all of these reports,
girl,
all of the girl, phone records,
girl,
can't only be correct when you want them to be correct.
Right?
Every time she's like, yep, correct.
Correct. No,
but
no.
You deleted this one. I didn't do that.
It got crazy right there. I don't know what happened. The AI was AI-ing. That'd wasn't me. What Shaggy say?
That'd have been my excuse too. I'd be saying that AI. But yeah, she screwed up. And the way the defense played this, because I didn't know she Googled this at 2 something in the morning.
2:27.
I was like, oh, she just did it at 6 a.m. So yeah, old girl probably did tell
and
her.
That's
to
the
do
story
it.
That came out on
and,
defense.
Yeah, and that's what I was believing. And then he scrolled up.
He said, now what? He let him make them repeat what they said. Now, what would you go if you wanted to know what would have how long it takes for somebody to pass away in extreme temperatures? What would you say?
Yeah. And then she did it way before anybody even mentioned O'Keefe being missing.
Well, and to the
That's
point
so
that was
wow.
What the point at the beginning is that when she got home, she Googled about basketball. And so she said, oh, my daughter made some team and I started to Google about the basketball team. And so she admits that happened. And then the next search from the extraction of her phone
mm-hmm.
is that she then, and that's why he said, was there anything else on your mind at 2 o'clock in the morning yeah. after basketball? No, I went to sleep. Well, your phone says that you Googled Hoslong to die in cold. And those results are the same results that then came 4 hours later when you discovered a man dying in the cold.
So
what
you,
a coincidence.
So you all at 2:40 something, she knew O'Keefe was out there. They knew he was out there.
Absolutely.
Either dead or dying, whichever
Absolutely.
One. And went on about their day or their night or whatever.
All right.
Cold-blooded.
Now, there is something that has been bugging me that I've been trying to figure out. I haven't figured it out, but I want to share it with you all because maybe you'll figure it out. And maybe we'll see tomorrow, Friday,
mm-hmm.
What it's all about. So throughout all of the testimony, sometimes I would like block it out because I would get confused. Throughout all of the testimony, they keep harping on where everybody was parked at 34 Fairview that night.
Okay.
Where was your car? Where was this car? This idea that's been put across is that Brian Higgins, okay, who again is one of the federal agents, but he had an office at Canton PD, blah, blah, blah. He was driving, apparently, a Jeep, white Jeep Wrangler that had a snowplow on the front of it. Okay. Mind you, he has like a truck because they had, he and Brian Albert had come from New York because they attended the funeral of a fallen officer. And so he had driven his like truck. But he apparently has a snowplow on the front of his white Jeep Wrangler. Okay. So this is what a white Jeep Wrangler with a snowplow could look like. Okay. So this is the image apparently that Brian Higgins was driving that night. What is coming across is that a bunch of people didn't see this Jeep. There are the Alberts and the McCabes are the people who saw this Jeep. And the placement of it, mm-hmm. where it was allegedly placed, seems to not be clear. And apparently in early reports, the McCabes and the Alberts didn't say that Brian Higgins was driving this white Jeep. Mm-hmm. They actually placed Karen Reed's vehicle. So Karen Reed pulls up and let me see if I have it in here. Karen Reed pulls up to the house and she parks closest to the mailbox.
Okay.
Let me put this video up quick. And so what they are trying to say is that this white Jeep, okay, the rear was facing Cedarcrest, and then the front of his car was facing toward Chapman. And so they're saying that when Karen Reed and John O'Keefe pulled up, it pulled up in front of, right? So it would, the Karen Reed's SUV would be more in line with the front door. So it was in front of Brian Higgins' Jeep, okay? So that is enough of the context. Now, and remember, his body was found closer to
the flagpole.
Okay. So that is just the context and to like orient you as far as what you're going to listen to. And then, of course, that's the Jeep. Now, the defense, everybody has been asking each of the people who came and as they get on the stand, do you remember this Jeep? Did you see this Jeep? Where was this Jeep when you saw it? Where was this? So it's going to be a stream of clips of people answering that question. And you can just see the different answers.
When you first got there, your wife parked your vehicle in the driveway, correct?
Yes. I don't recall if we pulled all the way in or not, but there was a Jeep parked in front of the end of the driveway in front of the mailbox. I found out it belonged to Brian Higgins. I didn't know it was his Jeep.
And it had a plow on the front of it?
Yes, it did.
It was parked adjacent to the Alberts property on Fairview, facing toward up the hill toward Chapman Street, correct?
Yes.
And your testimony is that that Jeep remained parked in front of the Albert house until Brian Higgins finally left and drove it away at the end of the night.
That's my recollection. The Jeep was right there. From the edge of the driveway, it's right there. I believe it was a two-door Jeep.
About 5 minutes after you got to the Albert home that night, you saw a black SUV parked outside the home. The black SUV was parked in front of Higgins' Jeep with the plow on the front, correct?
That's correct. My focus was on the black SUV, which looked outside would have been in front of the front.
On January 29th, 2022, when you spoke to Michael Barker, you told him that you saw a black SUV parked to the right of the residence as you look at the property from the street. Did you not?
I did not. I've always stated the SUV was in front of the house if looking out the front door.
With regard to the directions that you gave, or your wife gave John O'Keefe, if they were coming as you directed them on
a left coming.
You never saw the black SUV traveling in that direction or parked in that direction, correct?
That's correct.
You were coming along Cedarcrest, correct?
Correct.
You indicated that the SUV, the dark SUV, beat your car to the intersection. Is that right?
Correct, sir.
And because the car was ahead of you, Ricky flashed his lights as a courtesy to say, you got the turn.
Correct, sir.
You pulled up to Fairview and stopped relatively close to the driveway. As you've already indicated, but I want to make sure I'm clear about this. Did any car pull in between Ricky's truck and the SUV when you were sitting behind the SUV?
No, sir.
You didn't see a Jeep?
No, sir.
With a big old snowplow on the front of it?
No, sir, I did not.
That car was never between your car and the SUV, was it?
I never saw any other vehicle in between us.
All right, fair enough. You certainly did not see a full-sized Jeep Wrangler outfitted with a snowplow between the SUV and Ricky's truck?
I did not.
Sounds like a ridiculous question. You didn't see any other cars. There were no other cars between the two of you.
Correct. When you got there, your best memory is that the black SUV was already parked outside the residence, correct?
Correct.
And it was facing in the same direction that you were facing as you approached the residence?
Yes.
You came from the Cedar Crest side and you were facing toward the Chapman Street side, correct?
Correct.
Same with the black SUV?
Correct.
And there was nothing obstructing your view as you sat in the driver's seat of your Ford F-150 of the back of that black SUV, correct?
Correct.
You did not see, for instance, a Jeep with a snowplow on the front parked in between you?
I did not.
And in fact, you didn't see a Jeep with a snowplow parked anywhere on the property that you recall, correct?
To the best of my knowledge, no.
You testified earlier that you weren't sure exactly where Brian Higgins parked that night when he arrived at your house, correct?
Right.
And you said, I'm not sure, but then you give a pretty vivid description about him being parked, you think, in front of the house by the mailbox facing away from your residence, correct?
Right, yep.
Is that statement something that's from your personal recollection or for something that you've discussed with other witnesses in this case?
No, it's from my personal recollection.
I don't recall. Brian Higgins' Jeep was in the driveway backing up as we pulled in.
Describe his Jeep.
He had a Jeep Wrangler. I believe it's white.
Any appendage on it?
A plow.
A snowplow on the front?
Yes.
After Mr. Higgins moved out of your way, out of the driveway, where did he put that Jeep?
I don't know. I don't know where he parked.
When you pulled into that driveway, you at least temporarily parked in the driveway waiting for her, correct?
Yes.
What other cars were in the driveway at that time?
I don't remember.
What side of the driveway did you park on?
I don't remember.
At that point, the front lawn of the house was to your left, correct?
It would have been, yes.
Right. And there were no obstructions between you and the front lawn on your view, correct?
I wouldn't be staring at the grass. So no.
Okay. I didn't ask you where you were staring. I was just asking if there were any obstructions.
Okay, yeah.
And the answer to that question is?
No.
You indicated that Jeep was just a little bit in front of the mailbox, and the rear end of that Jeep would be butting up against the driveway.
Yes.
Quite a bit of detail about where that Jeep was. Would you agree?
No, because I drove down the street, and I took a left into the driveway, and there was a Jeep there.
Okay. I mean, between then and now, have you and Mr. McKay ever discussed where that Jeep was, your memories of where that Jeep was?
Possibly.
You're aware that he put the Jeep in the exact same place that you did.
I am. Oh, wait, no. Excuse me. Repeat the question. Right. I know he knows where the Jeep was. I'm not aware what he said in here.
I don't know what this means, but it means something.
Are you getting that this guy covered
the body?
The body, and then went and parked the Jeep somewhere else?
I don't know. I don't understand. Ryan Nagel, Julie Nagel's brother,
mm-hmm.
Ricky, who was driving the vehicle that Ryan Nagel was in.
Yep.
And then what's her name? Heather or Hannah, the girlfriend who was in the car with the three of them.
Mm-hmm.
None of them see the Jeep. And then the guy who didn't know nothing, I don't remember, I don't know, but that is Caitlin Albert's boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And he don't seem like he's very wise anyway, but he was like, no, there was nothing obstructing. I was next to the yard to my left and there was nothing obstructing my view. There was nothing in the way. All of them are saying there was no Jeep. Brian Albert, Nicole Albert, Jen McCabe, and Matt McCabe are saying that this Jeep was parked right at the mailbox.
So in order for that Jeep to have covered the body, if it did, it had to do that before everybody left the house, before everybody's rides start showing up.
Yeah, but
that's who everybody's saying they didn't see it are the ones that came and picked up people.
Yeah, but the problem is Ryan Nagel in that car pulled up at the same time as Karen Reed and John O'Keefe. There was a little bit of context in there that may have been confusing,
yeah, okay.
But what they're talking about is Ryan Nagel, right? Ricky and Hannah and Karen Reed arrived at the turn for Fairview at the same time. Karen Reed's vehicle was a little bit faster. And so the Ryan Nagel vehicle flashed their lights to tell Karen, go ahead and go down mm-hmm. Fairview. So she went first and they all testified. She parked at the mailbox. They parked in front of the driveway. And so that question is, was there anything between your vehicle and that black SUV? And they're like, no. But if that white Jeep Wrangler was at the mailbox, that means Karen Reed's vehicle would have been in front. Mm-hmm. And that Jeep that parked at the driveway to pick up Julie Nagel, there wouldn't have been able to see the black SUV because the Wrangler would have been there.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense. I don't know what is happening, but something is happening. And when he's on the stand tomorrow, I want to see how it's brought up. I think that there's going to be something is up with this Wrangler. I don't know what it is. Something is up. I promise
something
you.
Something with this whole case. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to come up with a story in my head. Why would the Wrangler be there the beginning and not at the end after he leaves?
Because I don't think it was ever there.
You don't think it was ever there?
I believe them. I believe Ryan Nagel and Ricky and the girl. I don't believe that white Wrangler was ever there. I think that they later tried to place it there at the mailbox. I just don't know why. Why do they need it to be there? What part of the story does this help? All right, y'all.
Yeah.
We've been here a long time.
We have.
Thank y'all for watching. I hope y'all are keeping up. The trial is not done yet. We are still on the presentation of the Commonwealth's Commonwealth's presentation of the case. Eventually, obviously, that'll turn over to the defense. I'm not a lawyer, but I am so curious at when the Commonwealth rests. Obviously, the defense is going to make a motion to have this case dismissed and ended because they're gonna whatever that typically happens. I'm so curious if Auntie Bev, who is the judge, we just call her Auntie Bev, I'm so curious if she is going to allow this case to continue, because I think a lot has been presented, but I'm not a lawyer, so maybe she will say nope, keep it going. I don't know. Thank you for watching. Tune in to the case. Come back next week. Join the Patreon if you want to watch. We've been doing a couple live watch parties. It's been a good time.
We're doing another one tomorrow. Right?
I want to do another one tomorrow for Brian Higgins' testimony. So if you're in Patreon, block your work schedule. Tell him you're busy, because we got to see what Brian Higgins got to say.
Come kick it with your boy.
Follow me. I'm Not Lawyer But on all the things.
You can catch me on IG. That's GOOLZBY. And Building with Goose on YouTube. And Let Us Tell It on YouTube.
One more thing, because I see Terrence in there. I know she already denied the initial dismissal. What I'm saying is that typically after the Commonwealth or the state, the prosecutors present a case before it turns over to the defense to present their case. Usually attorneys make a motion to say they presented their case. It's not good. This case should be dismissed. What I'm saying is I assume that that will happen as it typically does in trials. And I'm curious if Bev is going to agree with them. We'll see. Until next time.
Pull up. Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. Bang, bang. Gavel. Bang, bang.